This podcast is brought to you by VMware, the leader in virtualization.
Hello, everyone. This is Mike Adams. I'm the Senior Product Marketing Manager here at VMware for a product we have called VMware Lifecycle Manager. And joining me today is the Senior Product Manager, Brian Emerson. Brian, how are you doing today?
Good, Mike. How are you doing?
Good, good.
All right.
And what we wanted to do on today's podcast was talk about a product that we released earlier this year called Lifecycle Manager. So, Brian, when we take a look at Lifecycle Manager, just at a very high level, can you describe what the capabilities are the tool are and what it can do for the VI administrator or the sysadmin?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's a couple fundamental things that we're trying to do with the product. When you look at a virtual infrastructure deployment, and as customers start moving from deployments that tend to be, just say starting with 5, 10, 15 VMs, getting up to tens of VMs, hundreds of VMs, thousands of VMs, what you want to be able to do is as a infrastructure team, ensure that you have the right procedures in place to be able to not only handle that type of scale as far as how many VMs are being deployed into the environment, but also ensure that you have some consistency, policies and standards in place for what you're deploying, how you're deploying it, and who you're deploying for. And so what Lifecycle does is a couple of different things. So the primary thing, I would say, is really around automated provisioning. And so what we're trying to do for the VI administrator is say, once a request for a VM comes in, we can look at that, we can basically, as administrative team, look at the VM and say, okay, this request is good to go. I'm going to hit, I'm going to say this is approved, or hit the approve button. And what we want Lifecycle to be able to do is really, from the very starting point of VM creation to the very end of getting that VM deployed and then out and made available to the end user, and we really want to automate that entire piece. Right? So it's kind of interesting. When you think about VMs, a lot of times it gets associated with something like, this is very easy to deploy. What are you talking about around this end-to-end provisioning? But if you think about what it takes to provision a VM, it's more than just, saying I want to create a VM or I want to clone an existing VM. It's like you need to create the VM, you need to get an operating system installed on it, you need to be able to assign it an IP address, to join it to a domain, to do some type of sysprep or customization to the OS at time of deployment. And so there's lots of different steps that kind of manually add up to a lot of things that an administrator might have to do as part of the provisioning process. And then there's some extensions to that, right? So that's just getting the VM up and running. There's also cases of saying once the VM's up and running with an OS, I want to go and install some software on it, things like that, right? So there's this kind of end-to-end provisioning process. What we want to be able to do is automate that for the administrator. And it really kind of takes on two levels within that, right? So the automation is really around VM configuration, so ensuring that up front the administrative team can configure how they want VMs to be created. And then what we can do from there is say, all right, every time a new request comes in, based on the type of request that it is, we're going to use one of those standard configurations. And so think about that from the standpoint of now we have lots of administrators touching the system. We have lots of different templates that we could potentially use. The one thing we want to be able to do is ensure that we're using the right template based on the type of request that's coming in. And so Lifecycle Manager does a lot for the administrative team to help manage that aspect of VM deployments for them.
All right. And there's a couple things you said in there around different users of the technology. So the primary user of this technology is the VI admin and the sysadmin, right? And then the other kind of side of this is that they're requesting either themselves or on behalf of users or letting users select these machines, and those users could be anybody within the company, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So the other side of Lifecycle is being able to funnel requests for VMs that are coming in. So the product does two things in that area. The one thing that it provides is a centralized place for folks to be able to request things, right? And so when I say folks, I mean, typically it's either infrastructure administrators that are requesting something or, someone within the organization, let's just say someone from the development environment group saying, I need some type of VM for a certain period of time, right? But the point is that there's lots of cases where the administrator is not necessarily saying, I'm giving you self-service provisioning access, so I'm not giving you the ability to just go and provision whatever you want. I'm just giving you a centralized interface for be able to ask for things, right? And so the administrative team can then look at those requests and make some decisions about them, right? And then that leads into the automated deployment that I talked about before. Part of Lifecycle Manager is to say not only do we provide a centralized place for those requests to be submitted, but then the flip side of that is saying once the VM is actually provisioned that we want to be able to give the right access control to the requester of that VM or other people that that requester wanted to have access for that VM. So, for example, once the VM gets provisioned, we also have, as part of the request portal, the ability for that VM owner to be able to go into that VM and do some basic interactions with it. I think the key thing here is that we're not giving them administrative control over the virtual machine. You're giving them more things like, you know, I have the ability to power it on, power it off, snapshot it, look at resource utilization information, but you're not giving the ability to say, I can just go change the memory whenever I want, or I can go and change the CPU whenever I want. We kind of reserve those as things that the administrative team still has control over.
So basically we're kind of offering users a standardized catalog that they can select from, and it's not like they can create kind of, let's say, a rogue configuration or, you know, decide to make changes on their own behalf. They have to select from a certain catalog, right?
Yeah, and so the administrator is defining that up front. So when we talked about the standard configuration pieces, you know, what the administrator does as part of configuring lifecycle is defines, you know, what are the different what we call template profiles, or what are the different server types that you're able to choose from. And the administrator can define those based on the type of request that comes in. So, for example, if someone comes in and asks for a production machine, what the administrator can do is say, all right, well, I have five different VM configurations that are pre-approved for production requests. So based on me knowing that it's a production request, I provide to the user, here's the five VMs that you can choose from. Right, and so what that does, you know, instantly is ensure that you're not having rogue configurations that are being requested. And then the second piece of that is those configurations are also used as part of the automated provisioning. So now the system knows, hey, it's a production request. I'm using, once the user selects one of these templates, this is the template that I'm going to use as part of the provisioning process.
And those templates are coming from Virtual Center?
Yeah, they are. So the important thing around lifecycle is we're not duplicating anything that already exists within Virtual Center, right? So, for example, we register resource pools within lifecycle, but when we're talking about registering resource pools, we're talking about going into VC and selecting resource pools that already exist. And the same thing is tied to templates, right? We're not introducing a new concept of templates within lifecycle. We're just providing the ability to be able to tap into VC, grab some templates that we want to use as part of the standardized process for VM provisioning, and then associate those to Lifecycle Manager as part of the provisioning process.
Okay, great. And then you also mentioned a few other things before. We talked a little bit about provisioning virtual machines and tracking virtual machines. There's two other concepts on Lifecycle Manager I think that are important as well, and those are around placement of the machine and using the correct resources, and also decommissioning of machines. Can you take a quick second and talk about those two concepts as well?
Sure. Yeah, so when I talked about the automated provisioning piece, you know, when you break that down, there's kind of two elements. So one is configuring the VM in the right way. So that kind of leads to all the things I discussed around, you know, sys prepping and installing the right software packages, configuring it with the right resources. So, for example, you know, the amount of memory, the amount of CPU, the number of CPUs, things like that. That's kind of one aspect of VM configuration. The other part of automated provision is around intelligent placement. And so the other thing this solution does, and what we want to help administrators with, is determine upfront where is the right infrastructure to place VMs based on the type of VM that it is. Right. So, for example, if it's a production VM that someone's requesting, what an administrator can do is configure the system to say, okay, if it's a production VM, that means as part of the deployment of that VM, I'm going to provision it to a certain resource pool running on a certain cluster. I'm going to deploy it to my tier one storage because it's a production application. I'm going to join it to the production domain, to the production network. I'm going to assign an IP address from a range of IP addresses associated with that network. Right, so it's basically saying, based on the type of request, we can drive where that VM gets placed in the environment. And so the, you know, the flip side of that is it could be a request for maybe a machine that I just want to run some patches, you know, a patch test on. So that machine might get deployed to a different set of infrastructure because it's not a production environment. So again, what we want to do is allow the administrators to configure this up front, kind of document it within the product, and then have that the product kind of take control of those policies to ensure that things are not only configured in the right way, but also placed into the right part of the infrastructure.
Okay. And then, so in kind of the larger scope there, when we're thinking about placing things correctly and then also offering templates or ways people can select different machines, would you say there's an element here that kind of avoids risk or helps people kind of deal with compliance?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing that you can run into when you got lots of administrators touching the environment is someone goes and deploys, you know, just some dev or some test machine, right, some random machine, they drop it on the production network, and that machine doesn't have, you know, the right OS, doesn't have the right patch levels, can start opening up particular vulnerabilities to that network, right? So one of the things we want to be able to do is say, administrator can really lock those things down to say, hey, we have this production environment that we've configured, and unless something's a production machine, we're not going to let it go into that environment. And the system really helps an administrative group as a whole be able to manage that. And so that's one example of risk. And, you know, I think there's other examples that we can get into that, but that's one of the primary ones. I think, you know, the other thing tied to consistency around deployment that you mentioned before that I want to hit on is around decommissioning. So one of the things that's I hear from customers all the time is, you know, they might have a process for creating VMs, or maybe they don't, but, you know, it, more or less all these VMs get created. But unless they have kind of a process or policy in place for, all right, well, what's the lifespan of that VM, right? How long is it going to exist out there? You start running into the situations where you get, you know, lots of these VMs spun up because it's somewhat easy to spin them up, but not really any type of process to be able to say, when are we going to get these machines off of the environment, right? And so that might not happen as much with production machines because they're a little bit more tightly controlled, but you think about just random machines that are being used for just, you know, purposes that might only be used for a couple weeks or for a month or something like that. And what you want to be able to do is say, hey, as part of this whole process of provisioning, before I provision something into the environment, let's ensure that we understand the lifespan. So we understand what we call the decommissioning date within Lifecycle Manager is going to be. So what the system does is, as part of the implementation of a VM, tracks that decommissioning date, and the time that that date comes up, we start making some decisions, right? So the decisions that we can make is, let's delete the VM because it's no longer needed. Another decision is, let's not delete it, let's archive it to a, you know, backup data store in case it's needed again by the user. And then, you know, the third thing is we could also provide the options to say, well, before this is decommissioned, let's at least notify the user and give them a chance to be able to ask for an extension if they need this VM for a longer time, right? But the whole point around decommissioning is you're trying to set up a policy up front before the VM even gets commissioned or gets created to be able to understand what the lifespan of that VM is going to be, and then ensuring that you, from a policy standpoint, kind of track to that.
Okay. So if we're looking at, you know, a variety of different things that happen within this tool, things from approvals to changes to decommissioning to requests, is there a sense of, you know, this kind of reporting infrastructure within Lifecycle where I can see this and I can export reports and maybe build my own reports? Are those capabilities kind of inherent?
Yeah, so, you know, we call that within Lifecycle VM tracking, right? So one of the things that we want to be able to do as part of this is, obviously, there's lifecycle elements. There's important information that we're capturing. I always call kind of metadata that surrounds the VM, right? So things like, when was this VM requested? When was it provisioned? When is it set to be decommissioned? And then also elements around ownership that's really important to track, right? So this is things like who owns this VM? Is it the marketing organization, is a development organization? What's the purpose of this VM? Is it a production VM? Is it some type of test VM? Be able to capture all those elements, which we do within Lifecycle as part of the provisioning process, and then be able to say, as an administrative group, we can start running interesting reports that provide data like, let's understand within the next month how many VMs are set to be decommissioned or brought offline. Right, that gives us some basic elements to be able to understand how much capacity is going to be freed up next month from these VMs being decommissioned. Also things like, let's understand the trending associated with requests, right? So we're getting, you know, we got 10 requests last month for VMs, we got 50 requests this month for VMs, and, you know, the trend might be that we're seeing 100 the following month. All right, so there's just different elements that you want to be able to say, once we can capture that VM metadata around the lifecycle process, how do we expose it through reports in a way that administrators can kind of make use of this information? And then, as you mentioned, right, this is something that you could say, let's download this, let's export it to be able to drop it into either potentially a data warehouse or some type of consolidated reporting engine that a customer might have.
So taking kind of a little bit different angle, one of the pieces that I did want to discuss was talking about integration and working with other tools. And I guess the first start there is talking about actually Lifecycle's integration or working with our own tools here at VMware. So one of the pieces that sounds like it's important here is tie-in with Virtual Center. Can you talk a little bit about that for a second and how those products work in coordination to make some of these provisioning and decommissioning aspects happen within the environment and do that in an automated way?
Yeah, sure. So the way that Lifecycle integrates in with VC is through the Vim API, right? And so what Lifecycle does is extract all the components that we need as part of the API and kind of bring those into what we call workflows. All right, so for example, a request VM workflow that lives within Lifecycle Manager's ability to be able to request a VM, part of that request is saying once that request gets approved, we actually need to be able to kick off a provisioning process. And so the way that Lifecycle interacts with VC at that point is to say, all right, well, once we need to kick off that process, that's actually a VC action. Let's send a command to the Vim API that says go and execute this. All right, so that's the fundamental way that Lifecycle is communicating with VC. I think some of the other things that we're trying to do around the integration aspect with other VMware products is be able to say Lifecycle. If you think about some of the capabilities that you can have around provisioning workflows, there's lots of interesting things that we can do as far as integrating with things potentially like Update Manager, right? So be able to say as part of the provisioning of the VM, we might want to also apply a certain level of patches to that VM, right? So there's some capabilities that we can do from an integration standpoint to make some of those things happen.
All right. So the other thing, Brian, as you mentioned, a few of those different elements from approvals and change, there are other tools out there that some users may have, and I'm sure, when we bring up the conversation of Lifecycle, some of those ideas or thoughts of, how does this integrate with the tools I already have, how would that actually work, and how could I, make a product like Lifecycle, very beneficial in my environment and tie it together with what I already have rather than kind of doing some type of rip and replace, for example. So can you talk about some of the products people may use Lifecycle in coordination with and how that might actually, come about?
Sure, yeah, and that's actually a great point. I mean, in my past life, I worked in the service management space, so spent a lot of time around, ITIL processes, things like service desk, change management, CMDBs, and understand what's, especially large customers that are starting to embrace things like ITIL really have formalized processes for doing things like centralized request tracking, centralized change management. And when you think about the provisioning process, there's elements of the provisioning process that integrate with those types of systems. So, for example, a request for a VM could likely be going through some type of request management system or a service desk. Right? And so what we want to be able to do in those situations, definitely from a Lifecycle standpoint, is not to be able to say, oh, well, we're going to come in and we're going to replace that request interface, right? That's not realistic. That's not the way it works. Customers have spent a lot of time honing these processes around these management tools that they've already purchased. What we want to be able to do is say, all right, well, if a request comes in through a service desk, let's be able to easily route that request from an integration standpoint, if it's a request for a VM, into Lifecycle, so it comes into the kind of the VI administrator's queue, and then they can execute the provisioning of that VM in all the things that we talked about before, in the right way, making sure the VM's configured consistently, making sure that it's placed in the right place, things like that. And then as part of this, the way this kind of works on the back end is the way we expose Lifecycle workflows, so things like request VM, is through a web services API. Right, and so what these external solutions can do is say, I can call into the API call for request VM, pass some input parameters into it, into the type of VM that I need, information about ownership, how long I need this VM, things like that. And then Lifecycle can take that request and ensure that the VI administrative team is going to look at it and then make sure it gets provisioned into the infrastructure. All right, so that's one integration on the service desk side. Some of the other capabilities that kind of tie into this, the same type of thing is change management system. So I might have all of my approvals and my change advisory board and change requests all being managed through an external system. But what I want to be able to do from a integration automation standpoint is say, once a change request is approved within one of those systems, if the change request is either to create a new VM or to change the configuration of the existing VM, to be able to do the same type of integration that we saw on the service desk side, to be able to say, I can kick that information off to Lifecycle to be able to say, go and change this VM or go create me a new VM. Right? So this does kind of two things. One is it's from a kind of a centralized change management standpoint. It allows an organization to be able to track all changes in a single place. From a VI administrative standpoint, it provides Lifecycle provides the centralized request interface for the administrator to be able to track those incoming, you know, tasks for going and creating a new VM from a change management system or something like that. And then also, from a VI administrative standpoint, be able to understand lifecycle information tied to it. So we go back to those reports, right? So one of the other things that we can do as a VI administrative team is say, now we can look at reports that show me things like, you know, what's changed. Show me some event tracking for this VM. So I see, you know, for example, it was created in January. It was changed and memory was added to it in February. It was changed again where another CPU was added in March, right? So be able to track that information around that VM and just provides a little bit of an event tracking or audit trail associated with it. And so those are probably two of the primary integration points that we look at. I mean, obviously there's lots of other touch points for integrations, but at least when I'm talking to customers, that those tend to be the two primary ones that I see come up.
Okay. One of the other things I think was important that you mentioned there, so it seems like some of the larger customers may have some of those systems and tools and kind of processes baked in, but the other kind of underlying piece, if I'm a smaller customer, is it possible with Lifecycle maybe I could build my process around, you know, how I deploy VMs around this type of tool like Lifecycle Manager, where I can handle approvals and change through Lifecycle itself if I don't have those types of tools in place?
Yeah, and that's the exact way that we wanted to set up the solution, right? So understanding for larger customers the value of Lifecycle is around the provisioning interface with external tools integrating into it for things like change or requests. But, yeah, definitely to your point, there's going to be customers out there, and some that I talk to when you ask them, you know, what's your existing process for managing requests? And the answer is it's not a service desk that's helping me do that. It's like someone sends me an email, someone calls me up on the phone, right? So there's kind of these ad hoc ways of requests that then don't really get tracked, things get provisioned, things don't get managed. And so Lifecycle Manager, you know, fundamental capabilities of Lifecycle Manager is to provide some of those base elements. So if you don't have an existing tracking system for inputting requests, like Lifecycle Manager has one that you can use that will, you know, allow end users to be able to submit requests, allow an administrator to be able to track those requests, and then as you mentioned, also things like changes to VMs. Same interface, a user could come in and say, I'm looking at my VM that I own, and I see that, you know, I originally asked for 1 gigabyte of memory. I see that I'm almost running out of memory. I'm going to submit a change request to ask if it can be moved to, you know, 2 gigabytes, for example. And then have that go through a process where an administrator can look at it, approve it, deploy it, and then have the system track that. So that's a great point. I mean, one of the things we want to make sure of is if you don't have those types of tools in place, that we provide you the capabilities to really start looking at Lifecycle Manager as the central place where you can start developing what you want your processes to be.
All right. Brian, any final comments or final thoughts around maybe some additional capabilities of Lifecycle or points that we didn't hit today?
I think we covered, you know, I think we covered a majority of things. You know, I think it just maybe just to comment, you know, in talking to customers, you know, so far, I mean, I think they look at this and there's kind of two elements of it. One is customers that already have lots of VMs that are in their environment and saying, okay, I understand a lot of the problems that you can run into if you don't start putting standardization and process and policy and controls around your infrastructure. We need a tool like Lifecycle to be able to go and help us maintain that now over time. And then we got customers that are saying, you know, we're just getting started with virtualization. We want to make sure that we do this in the right way, right? So kind of the starting ground is that we're building processes and we're setting up standardization around VM configuration and VM deployment up front so that we never run into challenges later on with being able to understand, you know, what VMs are out there, how are they being used, who's using them, things like that. So really, I mean, it's kind of interesting. It's we see a lot of interest from customers that are very mature around virtualization for the reasons that I mentioned. And then also on the flip side of that is customers that are getting started with virtualization that want to make sure that they, you know, start off on the right foot, knowing that they're going, you know, going very rapidly in deployments of, I'm just new to virtualization, but I might be going to 400 or 500 VMs within a year.
Great. Well, I think that about wraps it up for today. If folks, if you need any more additional information on Lifecycle Manager, we have a lot of good materials on VMware.com, including detailed analysis around further product capabilities, technical components, as well as demonstrations that are available by other recorded webcasts and materials that we have.
Yeah, Mike, one thing I might mention just before we close out here is we also have Lifecycle wrapped up as a virtual appliance. And so this is great from a POC standpoint. If you just want to do an evaluation of the product, everything comes pre-configured. So we have an open database and open LDAP, for example. Everything's packaged into appliance where you can literally drop this into your environment, just assign some, the IP address to it, point to it, and start using Lifecycle. So it's a great way to be able to test it out and play around with people.
So that's probably the easiest way too, Brian. I mean, wouldn't you say that you could do any type of proof of concept or just a general evaluation of the product, the easiest way to do it?
Yeah. I mean, it's literally just downloading a file. You don't have to, worry about having the right database or, tying into your Active Directory structure or anything like that. It's all kind of self-contained and pretty easy to try out. So that would definitely be my recommendation if you want to take a look at the product.
Fantastic. All right. Well, Brian, thanks for your time today. Really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
All right. This is Mike Adams, and for Senior Product Marketing Manager for Lifecycle, and for Brian Emerson, the Senior PM on Lifecycle. We'll join you again soon for another podcast. Thanks.